This is Winfrey, and this is the Winfrey Monday Night Conference call, and it's a simulcast between a telephone conference line, which is how it started, and an internet broadcast on BBS Radio. And tonight, I am honored to have my guest, Carla Rucker. But before Carla says anything, she's getting ready to say something. I just thought I'd let some of the... Every time you hear that beep, which I'll shut off in a moment, that means somebody's coming in on the conference line. So, are you guys on the line? Can you hear me?
Yes, we are.
We have some people listening on the line, as well as on BBS. So we have Robert in Wilmington, and who else is here on the line?
This is Zoe in Sacramento.
Okay, Zoe in Sacramento, and who else?
Gina from Hawaii.
Gina from Hawaii. Carla?
Yeah.
Do you recognize when people are reincarnated dolphins?
No, I don't. How do you do it, Wynn?
Gina, hello.
you want me to say hello?
Yeah, say hello. I want Carla to hear. when people are reincarnated dolphins, and I've learned this from experience, is they have this unending joy. They are really playful, and you say, "How could they be that way in this realm?" And of course, Gina lives in Hawaii, and she goes down and actually swims with the dolphins. And I mean, there's more to this that I could share with you about dolphins. You know, I got to the point where I could recognize dolphin energy. And Gina is a really good example of it. So she's a great people that have dolphin energy are wonderful to work with because nothing bugs them. They're always joyous and happy and want to play.
The dolphins inspire me. They're so wonderful.
Yeah. And they're not codependent. They probably used to be. They had to go through working out their human karma. But I've never found a person with dolphin energy that has any codependency, you know, or neediness. They're just, they're really cool. Okay. We have Zoe on the line. Zoe, we have Gina. And who else is on the line?
We have David in San Antonio.
David in San Antonio. Okay. And who else?
Hi, Wynn. It's Julie in Federal Way, Washington.
Hey, Julie.
Hi, Wynn.
And who else?
Donna from Massachusetts.
Hi, Donna. And
hi,
anyone? Wynn. And who else? How many of you guys that are on the line have read? And this is on the conference line because they're going to answer. How many of you have read Carla's material?
I have, Lenny.
I have.
I have.
Nope.
Carla, that's pretty good. A pretty good answer, isn't
it?
Huh? Do any of you guys have a question before I mute you? Don't answer it right now. Let me just write down the questions, Carla, and we'll come back to them. But,
all right.
If that's okay with you. Okay, usually works better because then I can mute everybody. But any of you have a question that you'd like Carla to answer?
What does she think the ascension process will be like?
You ask her the tough questions. What does... That's a good topic because I think that ascension will be like... Carla doesn't usually cover that. She usually avoids it, which is...
I don't avoid it. I just gave a 90-minute presentation on it last week.
Oh, okay, good.
In Kona, Hawaii.
We'll ask that.
Yes, Tina, I did. I was there. I met Maya. She's on the line in person.
I think she is. Thank you so much for taking the time to meet her.
Delighted to do that.
That made
you
a big difference.
You know me, Wynn. One-on-one is my favorite.
I know. one-on-one is my least favorite. That's why we're good together. Who else has a question? Did I hear another question out there?
Yes, Gwen. This is Robert.
Yes.
I would like to know how Carla would feel. What would be the biggest difference from going from third density to fourth density in our awareness?
Difference in awareness from third density to fourth density.
These are good questions, Gwen.
That's a good question.
Hey, man. Okay. And who else has a question?
I have one about, it's also about the ascension, whether people who are not ready for the ascension will, I read in Carla's, what you had on the computer today anyway, that, you know, there will be a division between people who are ready and those who aren't, ready to go on and those who aren't. And I'm wondering, and those who aren't will be going to another planet, and I'm wondering whether that's going to happen through a natural process of they'll live out the rest of this life, and when they die, then they will come into being on another planet, or whether we're going to be driving along the street and suddenly the person ahead of us is going to disappear.
Hey, right. That's the way it works in the movies.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good division. How's it going to happen? How will it happen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, I think we should discuss, I think Carla and I should both discuss some of these answers, because we both have different, we may have different points of view on it, or I think these are really good questions, and we can address it together and see what we come up with. Anyone else have a question? Oh, we got all our questions. You know, if somebody that's listening on the computer is watching the BBS phone number, or if you want to email me a question, this is even better. Email it to winfree@yahoo.com, WYNNFREE. I do have my computer on, so I could pick the question up. And I think what I haven't done, let me start my own little tape recorder here on my phone.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound. Please wait. This conference is now being recorded.
Okay, we're now being recorded, and I'm going to mute you guys for the moment, and maybe later I'll open it up.
All callers are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
Okay, so this is Monday and January 18th, and we have people that listen to this on the recording. So this is our live internet call with a conference call. And this is my once a month get together with Carla Ruckert. And for those that you don't know who Carla is, or have never heard of her, if you read my book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, she occupies a really big portion of the book. She's quoted over and over again. And she, in 1981, had a voice come through her that identified itself as Ra. And Ra explained that this was not an individual entity talking to her. This was actually a group energy, a group soul that was, you know, if you try to imagine how this works, which I have, it's a group soul that is in another timeline. And let me...
Entry and exit chimes are off.
Okay. A group soul in another timeline. And so there's many, and this is my take on this. Carla can trying to understand how this works in this realm. You have another timeline where they can just postulate and work and figure out the words to come through, and it's a whole group working on all of these words and bringing them through, and where they can do it, where it just comes through in a moment, and the person who's channeling says the words, they were all worked on very deliberately. Maybe it seems like if you were in that realm working on it, maybe you had hours to figure out each sentence, and then it comes into this realm, and it's one sentence in this realm. So they're very carefully constructed, and it's a group energy. And it's a huge group energy. It's not a small group energy. Maybe millions of individuals. Carla, do you have any idea how many souls are in the Ra group? Did you ever ask that?
No, I don't. I've really no idea. And I'm not sure that it's the entire social memory complex. It might be a large clan within the social
right.
memory complex that decided to do it as a group. But it is certainly a group.
Yes. In other words, the way I would understand it is there's a huge group, and then there's subgroups. And
right, because
council.
Ra was
yeah.
talking to Atlantis at the same time it was in South America, at the same time they were talking to Egypt. So
exactly,
I think there are different plans that work together.
So when you were channeling Ra, they would have assigned a certain group to work with you, probably.
Well,
okay.
They had been looking, according to the Ra material, they had been looking for like 200 years for somebody who could actually channel the words.
Uh-huh.
And it was peculiar and wonderful that both of my research partners, Don Elkins and Jim McCarty, were very spiritually advanced people who had tremendous love in their hearts for me.
Mm-hmm.
As undeserving as I am, and I felt the same about them. And we had all given up a great deal in order to seek, that's a long story, but trust me. And I think that combination, and also they mentioned the fact that I was a pure person, and they weren't talking mm-hmm. about virginity or, you know, sexual purity. They were talking about single-mindedness as far as seeking the Creator.
Mm.
I was born seeking the Creator, so it's just a gift. I mean, I can't really take credit for it. I'm driven, delightfully driven. I'm delighted to be driven, but ever since I was tiny, I have sought the meaning of infinity.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's obvious to me that if they have to, there's been many times in history when people in this realm have talked to high beings that originally the first contact was kind of innocent and started out pure, and then it became like, God, I can get a lot of attention for doing this. People
yeah.
will give me money because I do this. This, I can have power for doing this. And so it gets corrupted. And they don't... They probably have to, I would say they have to pick people pretty carefully since they've watched this occur.
Well, you know, when they don't have much choice, they have to choose people that are on their wavelength, literally.
Yes.
Vibrating.
And take,
as they
and take
vibrate.
Their chances.
It has to be compatible. So
mm-hmm.
they can hook in with people that are on their station, let's say.
Right.
And so, you know, that's what happens is if you get your ego involved and if you start thinking about, oh, gosh, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say I don't know. I don't want to channel that because then the person will lose interest in me. So let's just dip into my own opinions a little bit and answer the question because, after all, you know, I probably know as much as they do. So then
mm-hmm.
they give specific information or they accept fear-based questions and, you know, they drift off the station.
Mm-hmm.
And so... they can't get the positive contact anymore, but it's a crowded universe, and a negatively oriented entity is rubbing his hands at that moment and saying, oh, good, I'll say that I'm that contact, and they won't know the difference, and they don't.
Mm.
for the most part, they're the first ones they fooled, is themselves, you know, and they don't know what happened. But you read in people that you feel have drifted off the station, you'll see where they start giving more and more specific information. They don't say, I don't know. They don't say, I can't tell you, because that would break the law of confusion or free will. They just answer the question, and the questions get more fear-based, and all of a sudden, you know, they're saying, flee to the country, flee to the mountains. You know, what can I say? Would you like me to give a slight tweak to your explanation about how they come to us?
Yeah, please do.
I think the deal is that fourth density above works in time-space rather than space-time. So they have a field of time and a river of space, as opposed to our field of space with our river of time. So I think they're very flexible as far as time goes. They have no problem. It's simultaneous time to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be the tweak that I would give to it, because I don't think that they're on a different timeline. I think they're on a metaphysical timeline as opposed to a physical timeline. And that's one of the joys of getting into fourth density.
Mm-hmm. So that's what, but they have a lot of, when I say they have a lot of time, they can actually work what would seem to be a lot of time to formulate an answer that comes right out of you.
That's right. That's right. They can move around all they want in time. And the other thing is that I don't think that they carefully shape the words. That's not my impression. I think what they carefully shape, and I think you're totally right about how careful they are, I think they're impeccable in their preparation of the concept.
Yes.
What happens is there's quite a bit of loss. Even, I mean, I'm just still a beginner, and I've been channeling for 35 years, and I really want to get better. But I never come out of a channeling session content, because I have gotten these infinite concepts, these round three-dimensional concepts that just have, you know, so many pathways and byways and nuances in them. And then it's like I have to roll that out and then take cookie-cutter shaped like words and stamp out words. You know, it's the difference between a difference between consciousness. Our consciousnesses are one, and they are in time-space. So we are in time-space all the time. But our minds, our intellects, are in space-time, and they've got to use the words. So in order to get something translatable, I translate these concepts into words. And I do think that I get some of it. I mean, what I get is legitimate. But I also can't exhaust the concepts. I have to let it go. If I stay with one concept too long, I lose the contact, because I need to keep throwing. It's like playing catch. You catch this concept ball, and then you throw it into words, and then you're empty again, and you can get another concept. And so
it's kind of like playing catch. You can
playing
get the
catch,
ball,
exactly.
And then you could like analyze the ball and take it to the line.
Well,
you know,
it's more intuition than intellect, but yeah, I think, you know, it's the faculty of you that writes poetry or that sings rather than the faculty that writes prose. It feels more right brain, left brain. But that's the deal. And so I always come out going, oh, you know, I tried. I tried my best. I gave 100%. And
well, you know,
I did the best I could.
You know, the thing that I see about channeled information from high sources is that, you know, humans want to know answers in their mind. And if a source is really good, when you listen to whatever they say, no matter what it is, if you track the energy, it throws you into a nonlinear space where you start connecting with them energetically.
That's right.
So the answer is far less important than the tracking of the energy. That's why reading channelings of high sources or listening to them can be such a great teaching mechanism of how to expand your space, because the linear answer that seems to satisfy your curiosity is almost meaningless, okay? But the tracking of... Now, when there's wisdom where they tell you, if you do this in your life, something will shift, that's more important, okay? Because then you can take something and use it and transform something. But just the curiousness of, like, what day will we ascend? Or, will Florida be underwater in 3 years? It's like, what do you do with those answers? How does that change your life?
Well, okay. I tell people, don't ask that question. And I say, instead ask, what spiritual principles should I think about when I'm considering this question?
Yes.
Then they'll get an answer.
Listen, we got a nice email from James Stevens in Tomball, Texas. And I just wanted to say hello to you and Carla. And I'm thrilled to be here with you via BBS Radio. Hi, James. Thank you for such a beautiful, high-energy email. And we better ask some of these questions.
Well, you want to go first? Shall I go first?
Well, I'll ask the question, and the first question, Jim, let's see if it's in order here. What do you think that ascension will be like? That's the question, okay?
Okay, like I said, if you want to go first, please do. Otherwise, I will start.
We can flip a coin.
You finish. Okay, I'll start.
You know what? You're my guest. I don't know if it's more honorable to let you go first or me to go first, because then you have
to
leave.
Well, I don't know either. I thought you might have a feeling for it.
I'll tell you what. You go first on the first one, and I'll go first on the second one.
Solid Jackson.
Okay.
Uh-huh. All right. Ascension. Well, it's a big buzzword. And like most buzzwords, it has come to mean less than it should. There's a lot of fear involved in it. I wrote a whole series on 2012 recently on my column, which you can get by going to Carla's Niche on www.llresearch.org or www.bringforth.org, bringforth.org. It was a good series. I think it was 4 or 5 parts, and you might want to take it in because it probably covers the subject better than I can in 10 or 15 minutes with Wynn here. But long story short, I believe that ascension or harvest or graduation is going to be individual. It's going to be at the end of our natural lives when we pass from the physical and drop our physical bodies. I believe that we will then move into our spiritual bodies, I think for ascension you move into the violet ray body because of the fact that the violet ray is the readout of the whole energy body. So you move into that body and you are in a place that is in time space. There is no perceivable break between physical life, physical awareness, and metaphysical awareness. I know because I've died and come back when I was 13. My kidneys failed, and I died naturally. They didn't have anything to fix me back then. They didn't have dialysis. And they didn't have medicine, and they didn't have transplants. So I quirked out and was immediately in another place. So anyway, that's how I know that it's a very easy transition. It's not a difficult one. Anyway, if you have died suddenly or if you're shaken by the fact that you've died, then there's a short healing process, as long as you need, to get oriented. And when you get oriented, you walk the steps of light. This is one of the nicest, most positive things from the raw material because it's so reassuring. And it's so simple. Angels and guardians guard these steps of light so that the values will remain absolutely true and so that no one can fall away. And each step carries a slightly higher vibration of light. And it is not seen by the person walking the steps of light where third density ends and fourth density begins. The light just gets a little bit fuller, a little bit fuller, a little bit. It's like walking into the sunshine. And you walk into the sunshine until the light is so bright that it becomes uncomfortable for you. So that you stop there. And that's where you have moved in your journey on Earth. That's how much light you can carry. And if you're still in third density, then you move to another planet. But it's not a painful or an abrupt move. You know that you are going to your new home and you are, you know, guarded as you go. So, you know, this day you will be with me in paradise. Well, it might be a third density paradise or it might be a fourth density paradise. Or I've often thought that some of us who are wanderers, if we have remembered enough, if we have lived according to fourth density, fifth density, or sixth density, wherever we came from, then I think we'll probably walk the steps of light right back to our home density. So it behooves all of us to wake up and practice holding the light, practice living by love, practice living fourth density values, because that is, you know, that ability to think of the Creator and to see the Creator in everyone and to love and offer compassion to people wholeheartedly is that which will help you in your harvest, because you're just trying to polarize the service to others. So, you know, you are the voice of love on this planet. You are the hands of love. You are the thoughts of love. So, simple as that. Try to remember who you are and why you're here and hold the light, share the light, be the light. I think what happens after you walk the steps of light, say that you've graduated and you're in fourth density. Well, again, there's probably a certain amount of orientation involved, settling in. And you start exploring all the options that you have. The reason densities are called densities rather than dimensions is that it has to do with how dense the light is with information. There's something completely different about each density's light. Each density can hold more information. It's more dense with information. Now, this shouldn't boggle anybody's mind because computers use light and hold a lot of information. But fourth density computers would hold more. And the fourth density biocomputer, our minds, our consciousnesses, can hold more. One thing that's different about fourth density from third density is that you're in time space, so there's no veil. So you see all of your own thoughts, but you also see that they're acceptable. And you see everybody else's thoughts. But you also see that everybody else is acceptable just as he or she is. And so there's a harmonization that is very effortless. It's much easier to work together. It's not that your privacy goes away precisely. It's that you have no reason to hide anything anymore. Consequently, things really smooth out as far as interaction. And it's much easier to form clans, to realize that you have an intention in common or whatever. And interestingly enough, the readings have said several times that almost every third density human that has now graduated from Earth, and there are millions of them that have already gone on, I think they've been graduating since about 1987. That harmonic convergence really turned it over, and there was enough fourth density light here that people started graduating because third density was waning. And they almost to a man and woman come back as fourth density wanderers. They're called the indigo children or crystal children. There are about four or five different names for them. Indigos are the most common, is the most common term. But these kids have third density wiring and fourth density wiring. So they are far more able to deal with the interpenetration of fourth density that's almost complete now. So some of them, I think the majority of them, are entities who, having moved to fourth density, look back and see the adhering karma from blowing up their original planet or making it uninhabitable, like Mars, like Maldek. And so they want to shed that karma once and for all, and they come back as wanderers to heal the planet as much as to help hold the light. I mean, it's not that they don't want to serve. They do, and they want to learn. But they also, I think, are very much oriented towards loving Gaia, the Mother Earth. It's very, very touching to see some of these young kids. They're just busting systems right and left. And I think that they're much fuller of a balanced energy that has balanced male-female energy. They're seen as, you know, attention deficit disorder because they're not dealt with properly. And they're also seen as great troublemakers because if something doesn't make sense to them, they bust it. But on the other hand, they hold the truth. So I think we're in good hands as far as the days to come. Let's see. Did I answer that question? Okay, I think so. Go, Wynn. What do you think?
You're a hard act to follow. Jeez. I want to point out to you guys, as you're listening to Carla, you can actually feel this. I can. Some of you can feel this. Feel the space in her words. And, you know, she is so used to being a transmuter of nonlinear energy and nonlinear space that even when she's not channeling, if you listen, you start getting to the lifted into another space. And that's a beautiful quality.
Well, thank you so much, Wynn.
And, I was supposed to make you look good.
I remember when you got off the air a couple of months ago, I spent almost the whole time talking about what a great guy you were.
We're just
friends with each other.
I
was talking about how skillful you are at finding ways to say things that are kind of out there in a way that is, you know, listenable to by anybody, even an entry-level person, you know, could go, well, yeah, that could happen. Oh, by the way, I just got back from Hawaii, where I talked about 2012. It was wonderful. It was the fourth Earth Transformation Conference in Kona, Hawaii, the big island. And I had such a good time. I when I do a presentation like that, I get to sing. You know how I love to do that. So I'd talk a little, and then I'd sing a little. It helps wake up people's right brain so they can listen better. So I just sort of burst into song from time to time. It kind of startles people at first, but then they like it.
Hey, on one of our Mondays, you and I should sing together. When I first met Carla, I was singing in her bedroom. Of course, her husband was there.
Yeah, and I think a couple of other people as well. It was not an orgy exactly, but it was an orgy of love, right? I was speaking at the UFO Congress in was it Boston? It was someplace in Nevada, and Wynn peeks in the window. Because I have to have a hospital bed when I travel. I had been put in a closet. It was a great big closet. It was a lovely room, but it was in the basement. So he was walking along looking in the windows. I guess you found out what my room number was, and you saw me and tapped on the window. And, yeah, this is the right room. So you came around and came in. It was great. So Wynn sits there, and he's got his guitar with him. So eventually he pulls it out, and he plays one of his songs, and I was just so charmed. And he goes, "Man, you actually invited me." You know, he didn't expect me to come through with, "Yeah, come see me." But like I said, one-on-one is my favorite thing. I said, "Sure, come see me."
Mm-hmm.
You were pretty close, and you just drove over.
Let me take a shot at this question, okay? And because I want to approach it from a bigger perspective. And, you know, a lot of people, when they hear the idea of ascension, even that word, or even they hear the idea of separation of souls, some graduate, some repeat, just the thought of that creates fear. And so they want an answer that they hope will take their fear away. And if one tries to approach that, guess what? It won't work because the fear won't go away. So the first step in even considering answering a question like that is, are you worried? Are you afraid to die? Are you ready at any moment to leave this realm? Where are you? What would it take for you to adjust your life so that if it ended right now, you could have a smooth saying, "That was nice," or feel good about it? And that is the challenge of everyone in this realm, to figure out what they need to do, what they didn't complete, who they need to say thank you to, what did they need to do in this realm that they didn't do so they cannot have to do it?
Who did they need to forgive?
Who do they need to forgive?
Who do they need to apologize to?
Who do they need to apologize to?
Forgive, forgive, forgive. That's how you get ready.
Now, I've asked questions myself about this particular topic, and I can repeat the answers to the questions, and in recent times, when I've asked that question, they said, most people are not going to leave this realm with their bodies. They're going to leave having a death, a natural death, and that it will be a process similar to what Carla described. It is possible to leave this realm with your body. It is possible, so they say. I don't know, I haven't done it. But if you wanted to leave with your body, the criteria is, and this is, I can't validate this, I can just say what was said in the channeling, the criteria is that all your chakras have to be open, every single one, not 100%, but more than 50%. And if you want to graduate to the higher realms, the only chakra that really needs to be open is your heart chakra, and that will ensure that you won't repeat this realm. But if you want to do it with your body, all your chakras have to be open. Now, you know what? That is an impossible task for most people. I mean, you need to have your sex chakra open, your power chakra open, your survival chakra open, your crown chakra open, and you see, as I see it, that you have to be able to create an energetic model of yourself in the realm that you would go to, and that if you have that energy model very firmly established in another realm, then somehow your body can move through a portal and end up in that realm. But it's not going to happen in some magical way that maybe perhaps Christians would think of it. And since it's going to be out of the reach of most people, it's not worth focusing on it. The focus would have to be on, how do I just be loving right now and keep my heart chakra open and stay out of fear and complete everything so I'm ready to go at every moment? That's should be the focus. Not worrying about, when am I going to leave here with my body, and are they coming, okay? That's my opinion about that. And that seems to make intuitive sense to me. And, you know, you're going, as Carla described, that staircase. Right now, each of us has the opportunity to create or connect with the parts of us that are beyond the veil. It is possible to connect with your energies that are beyond the veil. In fact, that's what I do on a lot of our conference calls or our Sunday grid healings. I do a meditation, and I think that's happening for people. They experience the energy of it, of that connection. And if you get used to making that connection, when you die, you go to what your energy is connected to. So if your energy is connected to a lot of incompleted things in the physical realm, if it's connected with a lot of desires in the physical realm, if it's connected with, God, I never made a lot of money and I always wanted to do that, and, you know, where you're, if it's connected to people that you've hurt and that have hurt you and that you haven't forgiven or that you need to get revenge for, guess what? That's where your energy's connected. And that's where you're going to go. You're going to have to go finish that in a realm where those energies are. So the key to this is learning how to connect your energies with things outside, beyond third density. And the more you do that, the more you create where you're going to go when you leave this realm.
You're really creating heaven on earth.
Yeah, you're creating heaven on earth. You're actually bringing those energies through your body into this realm, and you love it. You know, when one says love everybody, it doesn't mean that you're wearing your heart on your sleeve and have to go around telling everybody you love them. Love is an energy that, if you're in your heart and you're in that space, if people are around you, they will feel it and you will lift them. And you don't have to try. If you start talking to them, you'll come in at the level of loving, not at the level of trying to love. And I think people miss that. They try to be nice. And being nice, it's okay to be nice. It's like charity. It's okay to have charity. But it's far better to give to somebody because you have compassion for their condition.
The only way that you have compassion for someone else is to have compassion for yourself. And
mm-hmm.
that, I think, is job number one for all of us, is simply to accept ourselves for the first time totally, without saying, I wish I were this, I wish I were that, I wish I could do this, I wish I didn't do that. Forget all of that stuff and say, here I am, all ragged and dirty, kiss me quick or I'll run like a turkey. And kiss yourself and say, yes, I like me. And start forgiving all of the shadow sides that come up each and every day for all of us, impatience and anger and all those things. And just start loving and healing and accepting and respecting. And when you see a real dark shadow, say, look, I want to hug you to me. I want to tell you you're part of me and I love you and I'd like you to work for me. I'd like you to help me. I want you to be my determination. I want you to be my grit. I really need you. So will you please help me work for the light? And you just integrate your shadow side and use
mm-hmm.
all of your dark qualities for good purposes. Not that you'd steal for good purposes, I'm not saying that, but the entity that can figure out a way to steal might be able to see a creative way to solve a problem that would not be stealing, but would use that cleverness to throw everything up in the air and have it come down in a fortunate way. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that is how you begin to have eyes of love. Is the first person that you have to fall in love with is yourself. And once you've forgiven yourself for being so doggone imperfect, then when you look at other people, and sure, they're all a mess. They're all bozos. We are all bozos. Get over it. And just see every soul. They are all part of the Creator. They're all you. They're all mirrors to tell you about yourself, just like you are a mirror that reflects to other people. So when you're reflecting back to other people at the soul level, then the eyes of love, it's not that they don't see the imperfections, but they forgive them. And it's effortless to have compassion. You might have tough love, but there's that love.
Geez, I had a comment. Oh, I know what I wanted to say. Concerning the shadow side, which everyone judges. No, everyone thinks their shadow is bad and they have to get over it, okay? I shouldn't feel that way. I shouldn't look at that woman that way. I'm bad. I'm bad. No, I shouldn't be broke. I should be more loving. I remember I asked this one guy who was a channel. He was channeling, and I asked this question. I said, how do we get rid of the shadow part of ourselves? And he gave me a brilliant answer. He said, well, there's two ways to do it. Turn off the light or disappear. You see, we're existing because of our shadow. If it wasn't for our shadow, we wouldn't be here. It's the shadows that make things solidify and be aware. So everyone has got just the right shadow, and that learning, you know, to work around it is, and accept it. And just the thing about shadows is to understand how they influence you, that they can be very self-serving, and to have a good conscious mind discernment to say, I'm not going to do that. You might, you know, your shadow side might say, kill that person, or rape that woman, or anything, you know? I mean, it's okay. Those thoughts pass through most people at one point or another. Somebody does you in. I've had them. You just don't act on them. You say, okay, just talk to your shadow and say, hey, I'm not doing that this time, but you're a good guy. Thanks for bringing it up and presenting the option. That's the way we're going to work it. But...
That's great, man.
You like that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we're running out of time. Carla's talking too much.
Don't I always?
She has not learned to give succinct answers.
No, that's not my gift.
She loves to be the center of attention and the know-it-all.
God, it's such a big ego here.
You know, Carla calls herself a small medium at large, which I think is a good name. So we have about 5 minutes, and we have like a bunch of questions. And I'm going to pick what I think is the question that I think is the best question that has come in. It came in on an email from Suzanne Reed. Hi, Suzanne Reed in Ohio. And she asks... You could answer this one, Carla, because I'm on every Monday, so let your wisdom shine, and if there's any time, if I need to make a comment, I will. Does Carla believe that appreciation of the smallest of things in our lives can raise our vibrational energy and thus help us through this shift that is happening now? How else can this be helpful to ease our symptoms during the shift?
What a great question. And it's so true. There's something that Ra calls the magical personality, and Kuo has actually talked more about it than Ra did because there's such a great length of time since Ra was with us. But the magical personality is that personality that we achieve when our hearts are open and we set an intention to reach through the gateway of intelligent infinity into time-space to bring back inspiration or information from that realm. And when we do that, we can pull in that which we can't get from our intellectual minds, and we can move into a much more deep space. And that magical personality is the personality of a priest. Not that the priest is all preachy or acts out in public as a priest. It's rather, it's an attitude that you have where everything in your life is sacred. You are sacred. Your life is sacred. When you are washing out the toilet bowl, you are loving the toilet bowl. You are creating a ritual of cleaning out the toilet bowl. And when the toilet bowl says, oh, thank you, I love to be clean, then you know you've made it. And, you know, when your dishes start talking back to you, when you're walking down the street and you begin to feel the dance, nature is all around you and you're part of nature, and you allow yourself to become magical. That difference is a huge, huge difference. And it enables you to focus your life and have a rule of life so that all of the things that you do become meaningful to you. Chop wood, carry water, we've talked about this a lot. It's not a new idea. And it's eons old. The priesthood has been with us. And in the Bible it said, you are a nation of priests. We all carry the Godhead principle within us. And as we honor it, we become more and more capable of setting an intention and following through in our minds with attempting to live that. The priest at the altar is invoking the personhood of Jesus the Christ in the Christian religion and calls it down into artifacts, bread and wine, or for some, grape juice, and offers to the people that which he has brought through because of the strength of his faith in things unseen. And the people, if they also have faith, are imbued with Christ so that they walk out of that church and are hoping that if they meet somebody, that person meets Christ first and only secondly them. And that is the beauty of living for the tiny things, honoring everything. My husband, for instance, probably the most priestly man I've ever met, I noticed long ago that when he turns left in the car, his wrist makes a most beautiful arabesque on the way to turning. And I asked him about it recently, and he said, oh, well, I could just see it, you know. And so even turning the wheel of the car is imbued with ritual. It's not that ritual is a staid or stodgy thing. It's living and it's moving and it's dancing. But there is an attitude where you really have set your intention to bring back that radiance of being, that dolphin energy, and live that energy and not just know about that energy. And when you imbue all of the things that you do with sacredness, I believe your life changes completely.
What a beautiful answer. Thank you. And Carla gets the last word because I don't have time to say anything. But I don't even know what I would say after that. Except, Terry, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Hello. I've been enjoying this conversation.
Well, thank you. You should have interrupted us and said hello. I just remembered, where's Terry? And I said, I'll bet you she's just in the background, lurking in the background, listening.
Intently listening.
What's that?
Intently listening.
Intently listening. Okay. So, listen. This is the end of our show tonight. I'm sorry, all of you that asked questions that we didn't get to. but Carla talks too much, so we have to build that into our expectations. We probably can only answer two questions.
Well, I got the other one from the side.
Did you? Actually, we did hit on the answers to the other questions anyway.
Yeah, I picked it up.
Cleaned it off. And Carla does not talk too much. I'm just kidding if anyone's listening.
I do.
But her website is LL
Research. May I say how much I enjoyed this talk, Wynn, and how much I loved having the company of all those who were here? It's such a blessing. Thank you all so much.
Yeah. Well, I did too. You know what? You know what's good about you and I? We stand up against each other, and we're not intimidated.
And we love each other.
And we love each other.
Yes, we do.
And we can say whatever we want, and we've grown into this, you know, and then it's okay. So we're going to get taken off of BBS any moment. Good night, BBS, everybody. And let me stop my tape recorder.
F1, this conference is no longer being recorded.
Okay. Carla, are you still there?